Welcome to episode 17 of the On the Bounce Show. It's great to have you back here with us. Huge news today, or just general excitement. We have our biggest guest to this point. We really do. It is none other than Sipho Sisokotelo. He's on the couch here with Sandile. So I feel like there should have been applause. See, Sandile, you're gonna have me up here. We're just joking. Like, the nature of this show, obviously being visual, we have like quite a lot of staff here. So whenever we have a guest that just rolls in, I always think, does he think that we just brought people in to impress him, or do we actually have this many people working?
A cheeky renter crowd.
We really do that. Anyway, Smith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Last year, I had the privilege of actually having a proper interview with you. Yeah. I mean, we did this whole thing for Ryobi. It was the Won't Quit crew.
Yeah.
To tell like really cool sporting backstories.
Yeah.
So I think I had four or five sessions with you where it was gym workouts. It was like the whole sit-down interview of your whole life story. And it was really cool. Like, I actually watched it again this week.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into, obviously, you know, obviously professional bodybuilder. He's not just here because we like hanging out with strong dudes. We'll get into the career side of things.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, before we get into that, this last weekend, the box wrapped up as we hoped they would. Okay. Yeah. So we knew there was going to be a backlash after the Santiago loss.
Yeah.
But boy, was that a backlash. And obviously, Sandile and I got pretty into it. Hey? So we were at Bench Warmers over the weekend.
Yeah.
I was gonna have like one or two drinks with you,
and then we got into it.
Brandy specials, Clip Drift and Coke was coming out.
Yeah, it was.
But I almost feel like that was the only way to celebrate that game.
Yeah, the way to bring it home, way to give Eben 128 caps.
I still haven't shaved off my Eben facial hair, but it was a really cool way of experiencing that, because the vibe of the bar was so great.
Yeah.
There was only one game. None of this like, well, we need points here. It was like, we win this game, we win the trophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was also kind of really cool is we haven't won the rugby championship trophy properly since, well, we won it in 2019, but it was curtailed.
Yeah.
So this was the actual time we got to win the rugby championship in a whole season.
Mm.
And what happened with the trophy? The Oaks were drinking Clip Drift and Coke. That's out of it.
Truly South African win. I love that fight.
You know, there's been so many, like there's a really cool pic there of Jesse Creel holding the trophy, and there's a Clippies and Coke in there. It's just awesome. But that's just who we are, right? Mm-hmm. And we got to this point where everyone celebrates, and it was like, it's really coming together.
Yeah.
But Sabu, I mean, when it comes to celebrating the box and the box matches, you get to experience it like nobody else.
Yeah.
So you are the MP. Yes. I mean, there's no other way to describe you. You are that oak who comes out, and that's what we know is go time.
100%.
Wait, how did this? I mean, how long have you been doing this? Just the season, right?
Just the last three matches. Yeah.
So that's right. That's, I mean, we can't miss you. I mean,
yeah,
if you said to me, "No, I was doing it last season as well," I would think, "Okay, I've got to drink less on match days."
Right.
How did the gig come about? I mean, because we've been having MPs for quite a while now.
Yeah.
There have been some sort of stronger MPs than others, but then you blow them all out of the water. How are you approached? What's the brief here?
So, the story is actually quite short. I was supposed to do this 2 years ago.
Oh, hectic.
But unfortunately, I was busy and I was very genuine with the guys. I was like, Justin, I mean, as you said, I'm an IFBB pro, so I had a lot of travels. I think that year I was doing three countries and I was on like prep for like 13 months. So, dieting down for 13 months, I'm doing a lot of cardio. I just realized I was going to be tired to do it, so I couldn't commit. Mm. So subsequently, they asked me if I knew another big guy, which was actually my predecessor, Daniel. Mm. So the guy that just went on before me. When I came back this year after doing my last show in Dubai, they messaged me again on some, hey, listen.
We need you.
Is there any availability now? Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I actually do have time, because that show in Dubai was my last show. Normally, I finish competing around November. But this year, I was like, you know what, I need to call it in July. I was just really tired. So I was like, yeah, no, let's go. So that's how I ended up doing it.
So, but like, what is the brief, though? I mean, do you, obviously, your sport, and again, it's like I said, we're getting to this in a little bit, but like, it's the poses. It's how you emphasize your work, essentially, which is you, your body.
Yeah.
Now, do they say to you, cool, guys, so you're going to go out, is it slightly choreographed, or is it pretty much like you lead the way? And
it's a bit of both. It's actually a bit of both, you know? So, I mean, the madness is clear, intimidates.
Yeah.
It's like, we really...
I'm sure those all blacks will attest to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so the madness is really clear. You're there to intimidate. And look, South Africa, I love the fact that we're very strategic in how we even start intimidating, because so I get there first day on the job and I'm like, okay, sweet, like, so you see the signs. I mean, my first match was Alice Park, right? Mm. So I see the signs, black all backs going this side of the tunnel, whatever, Springboks this side. So in my head, I'm like, naturally my change room is on the
Springboks.
No, our changing room was on the All Black side.
Oh, yes.
So it's such a psychological mess as well, right? Yeah. So what happens is, as soon as they come out, we come out straight after them on their side. You're right. So it's also that thing of, like, as they turn around already, like, before you guys even see us on the camera, it's like, who the hell are these guys?
Yeah.
So obviously, I was elements of surprise because historically, as I said, they had Daniel. So now I remember, like, seeing, like, Borat Barrett and stuff like that, like, doing a double take on something, like,
what's going on?
We haven't seen this guy, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and you get this in everyday life. Like, you go to a petrol station, you go anywhere, people stop and stare. And it's not like, I mean, I've seen it in public with you as well. It's not because people are rude or whatever. It's like, we are not conditioned to see your dimensions.
100%.
So now in rugby, just think of the All Blacks. They know what Eben looks like. They know what Jesse Creel looks like. And then there's you.
They're like, what is this size here?
It's already like, I mean, behind the screens and stuff, already there's a bit of a mental thing about, you know, trying to get into their heads, because we're not trying to greet you as well. I'm not trying to walk up to him like, hey, hi, I'm Smoo. It's more like just like staring you down and so I'm like, don't look at me. You know, it's also just that thing. So it starts way before we get on the field, right? So and then as you said, the mandate is to get on there and just intimidate. And more than anything else, I think just get the crowd going, you know, as to get the guys anticipating the Springboks. So it's also that. And it's only when I did, I think, Bumalanga recently, where I spent some time with the boys straight after the match. So they went to dinner and then we chilled a bit, when I also realized what it meant to them. Right. You know, I'll never forget. You know, we're chilling. There was a Apelele and Lucanio, Mambimpi, and then Bonambi walks up to me. He's like, dude, like, I've been meaning to walk up to him, like, say thank you so much. So I'm like, okay, like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then he goes, no, like, for real, like seriously, like, you don't know what this means to us. You know, you walking out, as soon as we see you there, it almost feels like if anyone comes and messes with us, this guy's got, you know what I mean? So just to know that you play a certain role in giving the guys a bit of confidence in them knowing that, you know, like, you're there, even though, I mean, I'm not going to get on the field. I probably could, but I'm not going to get on the field and beat up people. But it's just, you know, the impact. So that becomes the byproduct of the mandate of intimidating, you know, the opposition, but also at the same time, rallying South Africa to be like, hey, listen, your boys are coming. So that energy, you know, that we have to outputs on the field then resonates throughout the whole match, you know?
Can I ask? I mean, you're used to audiences, you're used to eyes on you.
Yeah.
What does that one
No, it's different. In? No. It's you can't even compare the two. You can't remotely. So funny enough, I mean, Ben knows this about me. I'm an introvert by nature.
Oh, heck.
Yeah. No, so I'm always covered up. I don't like being seen. I stay in my little corner. So when the opportunity came, I don't know what made me think it was going to be the same setup as a bodybuilding stage.
Yeah.
Because as much as we have a big audience, right, the way the lights get, you know, get shone on you, you merely see maybe the first three rows in terms of actually seeing people. The rest is just like the crowd. You know they're there, but you're hearing more of a noise than anything else.
Yeah.
So psychologically, most of us that are introverts, you only tell yourself, you know what, I'm here for the first three rows. Even though, you know, when the lights come on, you're like, Jesus, so many people.
Yeah.
At a stadium, there's not that. And I don't know why you assumed there was going to be that situation. Because the first time I walked, like, you know, got on the field, you know, I looked at the crowd that was in front of me. I'm like, just a lot of people. And then my brain went, Brutus Stadium. There's people behind you. So as I turned around, I'm like, oh, there's more people. So it's a different experience, man. I'll never forget Ellis Park, the way the acoustics of the stadium is set up.
Yeah.
When they cheer, it actually feels like there's someone that takes a ball of noise and drops it into the field.
Oh,
and then it hits you in your guts. It feels like someone just like, like when we walked on, and like obviously it was the first time people seeing me, the noise, it was like, I think I gasped or something. I'm sure it wasn't caught on camera, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But it was like more of a, like, geez, like it's so for me, it's like, geez, that was a lot of human beings, bro. 65,000 people.
Did you get to tick off a little, because I know you used to play rugby back in the day.
Yeah.
Did you get to tick something off and like as a little, now you like that little kid in you is like, I'm done.
100%. It was that thing. I'm like, damn, like, if I actually pursued rugby and became a Springbok,
that
would have been my life. But then again, I was like, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Like, you're playing rugby for 80 minutes and like there's this background noise that's just consistently there, whether you're doing well, whether you're not doing well. And, you know, for the most part, sometimes you think the pressure might be when you're not doing well.
Yeah.
But I can imagine the cheer, because now there's that implied pressure that now I can't mess up.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's more like a psychological thing now where you're like, these guys just clap for me because I did well.
Yeah.
Let me try to continue that momentum. So I can imagine how that feeling must be, you know? So it was a beautiful experience.
And if you look at the stadiums that you've kind of worked at now, I guess, as you say, Ellis Park, it would be quite obvious for us to think that that's going to be absolutely electric.
Yeah.
Cape Town must have been different, but it's almost like there wasn't a lack of intensity. It was just a little bit different. Like it is.
It's
a softer, nicer place.
There's different crowds. So I'll tell you that much. And I don't want to say which is my favorite crowd, but I mean, it's kind of assumed, but it's different crowds. You know, you go to Cape Town is more, it's more poise. It's more, we clap, but we're not trying to really make noise. You know what I mean? And then you get to Mpumalanga and it's guys brying at 7 a.m. in the morning for a 5 o'clock match. That was a different experience. It was so beautiful. It was epic. Like it's they live, breathe. It's rugby. Like it's old women like having a brandy and coke with you because it's like their son or whatever cousin.
Shout out to them.
They have some relation to back into that field. You know what I mean? Or someone historically was in their family that played for the team.
Yeah.
So Mpumalanga was just for me. I was like, because I remember going there for rehearsals in the morning. I'm like, it's 7 a.m. Why
are you guys awake?
Fully awake, having a beer. They are having a braai. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm sure they know the game is only at 5. And mind you, the stadium doesn't open until 2.
Right.
So they are outside the stadium at 7 a.m. having a braai because this is a big event. This is a big day, you know. So, man, it was a beautiful experience all around.
But doesn't just remind you, like, we spoke about this months ago already, that the Box Saturday now is almost like a welcome to nation.
Absolutely.
And I think it's cool. Like, we had, you know, when the last match, Akani Sabini was the flag bearer.
Yes, yes.
So we get to use this as a platform for so much. And I think exactly what Bongi said to you. Mm. You realize that everyone's a role player here.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah, it's 24 hours to go and get the job done.
No, 100%.
But there's so many layers to this now.
Absolutely. And it's such a representation of South Africa. Yeah. We're just a people that knows how to pull in together, you know, and just to achieve, you know, the goal. So it's a testament to that.
Okay, so you said you don't want to say who your favorite is, but like, if you were to go back purely as a fan, because I think the last three games have been really cool.
Yeah.
They've all been high stakes, right?
Yeah.
We've heard the Wallabies far away. All Blacks win it with Argentina.
Yes.
Which would you, like, if you haven't been to a BOC game, out of those three, which would you say to go to?
It's got to be Ellis Park.
I knew it's got to be Ellis Park.
No hesitation.
Yeah, it's got to be Ellis Park. It's a different experience. It's a beautiful experience, but the match intensity itself was just difference, right? And I think because it was our first match, we've played them in a while.
Yeah,
there was also that thing where you got to prove a point.
Yeah,
I mean, I was sitting close enough with the boys where I think I was about 20 meters from the grounds, dude. Like, you'd hear the thump of the tackle in your seats. Like, when these guys run towards you, it feels like a herd of animals. Mm. Like, the stadium actually vibrates. So it's when the guys are tired from the match, you kind of like,
you feel it.
The intensity is different, man. The TV and the live experience and sitting that close to the boys, it's a different experience.
Yeah, see, I mean, this is going to sound so pretentious, but the last sort of 4 or 5 BOC matches I've been to have all been in the box.
Mm.
It's cool because you make a damn bird. It's going to sound pretentious. But to be that close, as you say, it is. Yeah. It's like, there's such a tactile kind of thing.
No, it's a different experience. I'll tell you what. It's. I wish everyone could experience it and actually understand the magnitude of what it means when the boys genuinely put their bodies on the line. Like you, I can't make you understand how, I mean, I shoot, I've heard a gun go off. I've heard things to hear body to body contact with someone.
Yeah.
You're consciously putting your body into that, knowing that I'm about to, it's such a hot thump. It's louder than a clap. You know, when people clap too loud and you're going, oh my gosh, that hurts.
Yeah.
It's louder than that.
But don't you also think that that adds more gravitas to Ibn 128 test
100%.
Matches?
Like, how does your body cope with all of that?
As a tight forward.
It makes no sense.
As a tight forward, he's done that. And he's 32 years old. I mean, so you said you chatted to a few guys after the Nelspruit game.
I mean,
what do you chat to about a guy like that? I mean, there was a really cool clip that you posted with you and Sia after the game.
Yeah.
You played rugby in high school.
Yeah.
Every South African who played rugby, you will always have a dream about playing for the Boks.
Yeah,
must be kind of cool when, you know, you got that common ground because they respect you as a professional.
Yeah,
they really do. The Springboks.
No, they really, really do. Like, and it was also one of those things where at first, I mean, I'll say the first game, like, I was there, they were there, but there was a bit of detachment because obviously we're playing different roles here. They're here to play.
Yeah.
I'm here to do the opening. So we really didn't mingle or get to know each other. But because of how social media, you know, took this whole thing and how it happened, there were guys genuinely like doing research and like trying to find out who I am and stuff, which was really cool.
Good thing you made that series. Huh?
Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, so it was really cool to see the guys going, hey man, like, you know, I know who you are, you know, because, you know, I just didn't want to just assume just that big guy that just walks on the field, you know? So that was really cool. You know, that is really, really cool.
So speaking of who you are, okay, so I know you get asked this question a lot, but how can you succinctly put what does an IFBB pro bodybuilder entail? So if I were to say, if I was a Springbok and no one knew about rugby, I would say I represent the Springbok. It's the highest of rugby.
Right.
You are that in bodybuilding.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, what does that mean as far as how many years it take you to get there?
Yeah.
What does your career kind of look like? I mean, how long is a bodybuilder's career if you think about it on the level? Because you know, just like the box, right? Even we spoke about 128. He knows what he needs to do to get to a certain point.
Right.
Yeah.
What does that mean in bodybuilding terms? How long is the career?
Yeah.
How far do you see yourself going in this?
Yeah. Look, I mean, to answer the first question, what is an IFBB pro? So being a pro in my federation means you have a possibility of going to what we say is like the Super Bowl of bodybuilding, which is Mr. Olympia. Yeah. It's the ultimate. It's us wanting to get there and dominate in the sense that you're trying to see who's the king of the bigger jungle. Because in South Africa, you know, as you said, I'm that guy. So I operate in this jungle. There's some guy who's the best in Iran. There's some guy who's the best in the United States. So now the idea is all of us to get together and see who's the king of the world, basically become the first ranked bodybuilder in the world, right? So that's what it means. It means a lot of hours, it means a lot of eating, it means a lot of therapy, means a lot of discipline, it's a lot of work. And I think, for the most part, that's what it means, you know, to be an IFBB pro. And then to answer, you know, where my career is going, you know, I turned pro 2018, and I was privileged enough to be the first guy, black guy, to do it, right, in the history of bodybuilding. And about 6 months later, Muzi, my gym partner, turned pro, right? So there's been a lot of guys that, you know, we are getting into the sport. The sport itself is growing because when I turned pro, I think there was only 7 of us, you know, collectively in the country of 60 million people. So, and then right now there's about, give or take, I think 31. So the numbers have increasingly.
It's not like the sport's got easier.
Yeah. No, 100% not, you know. The numbers are growing. People are getting there, and we do have milestones in bodybuilding. You know, my gym partner is actually going to the Olympia. He just qualified, right, in the 2-1-2 division. So I'm in the open class. There's different divisions in bodybuilding. So the open class has had a lot of, I want to say, history because it's the open class. So because it's an open class, it's the bigger boys, you know. And that's where Arnold Schwarzenegger competed. That's where Ronnie Coleman, the King, competed. Yeah. Phil Heath competed. So
these are the kind of household names that we pick up.
What I mean? Yeah. In fact, that's how I got into bodybuilding, was through Googling Arnold Schwarzenegger. But anyway.
That's what James did as well. You guys are different outcomes.
Just say.
So yeah, man, it's so the open class has become the most competitive, you know, even though the other divisions that are as strongly competitive, but the open class is always seen as the, you know, the Mr. Olympia, you know what I mean? So that's the goal. That's where I'm headed. You know, I've done a couple of shows, gotten a good feedback. You know, I'm one person that kind of didn't like the whole idea that, you know, you got to have genetics for bodybuilding, which is very hypocritical of me because that's the narrative about me, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, having the privilege of having the genetics to do bodybuilding is absolutely a privilege. It doesn't make me work any less. It just means the potential is there. And, you know, that's the feedback you always get, you know, is that I'm there. I'm at the cusp of cracking it and competing against the big boys.
Something I really enjoy about following you on Instagram or social media in general is that you give a lot of info about your sport. Again, for a lot of people, you look at a guy and go, okay, that looks huge. He goes on stage. He flexes, he does these kind of things.
That's it.
Man, his speedo is tiny. And they'll have a sort of like hot take on a couple of things.
Sure.
Something that I noticed in your recent post of competing this year is how much you took back from feedback.
Yes.
So it's a very, subjective. It's always difficult to say the word subjective because judges are there for a reason.
100%.
They're not just got their favorites. They are critiquing on various things.
Absolutely.
But like you say that getting feedback after an event, win, lose, draw, whatever, is something you take on.
Absolutely. You have to.
Now, you turned pro in 2018.
Yeah.
Younger, as you get older, you realize you know less. You become more humble.
Yeah.
Like, what does the feedback mean to you now that you feel like, do you feel like you should be further ahead in your game and you should know more? Yeah. Or have you come to peace with the fact that your sport is just so incredibly complex and ever-evolving?
It is absolutely complex, right? Mm-hmm. It's complex in a lot of ways, because in 1 year, you're big enough, and in the 1 year, you're not big enough. You know what I mean? It literally can become that kind of thing where you're like,
sorry, okay. No. Is that because you're a competition, or is that because of certain events?
It's just certain events, and also how, you know, depending on who wins Miss Olympia that year, that guy becomes the guy to beat. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it's now a matter of, I mean, I remember when Big Ramy won, you could have, like, you literally could feel that every single person who's an open body builder is trying to get big. Mm. Because now imagine, your nickname is Big Ramy in a group of big people. Mm. He was a big guy. Like, I mean, like, massive guy. Mm. So when he won, everyone then had the conceptualization that in order to win Mr. Olympia, it means I need to go for size. Mm. Right? And then, you know, the baton got passed on to someone else, and then the narrative became conditioning. And not to say that, you know, we miss the other elements of bodybuilding, but there's always like that one central theme about that guy winning that kind of directs where you need to go. And then you even feel it on the feedback where you're like, okay, the feedback is saying my size is okay. And then you look at the scale, you're going, but I've been the same size for the last 2 years. You know what I mean? But some years you're too big, some years you're not big enough. Some years you conditioned, you know, some years you're not conditioned enough. So there's also just that complexity, you know, and as you said, bodybuilding is a sport, it's subjective sports, you know. So you got to respect that as well, because some of us have now also kind of have a feel of the sport.
Yeah.
Where now I kind of know that, okay, cool. If I have this particular package standing in front of Ben, I'm Ben's guy.
Yeah.
But if I stand in front of Sandile, I'm not really Sandile's guy. And only because you see, you know, the judging that a certain head judge would have done, where you kind of have a feel like, okay, this judge goes for more of this rather than this. So also as someone who's smart, you kind of also know, okay, cool. This year, these are the shows that want to strategically try and position myself, because if I do that show,
this guy,
you know what I mean? Yeah. It becomes that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I just want to ask, I mean, sorry to jump in, but
no,
your mindset, you know, I always say people who do one-on-one sports probably have it harder, you know, the worst.
Yeah.
You always talk about this thing about pain and your relationship with pain.
Yeah.
Please, can you explain, like, what is it with pain? And is there moments in your career or in your life where you've really had to jump into that and use that to push you over the edge, especially when you compete?
Absolutely, bro. So I talk a lot about pain because the reality is training is not, it's not an easy thing to do, right? Yeah. So whether it's the pain they experience in the gym or what a lot of people, you know, call DOMS the next day where you can't sit, you can't, it's part of
that's,
the process.
That's delayed onset.
Delayed onset, yes.
What's the M and S?
Delayed onset.
Now just don't get it.
Novice guess, right?
When your body's sore? Did we say that?
As, yeah. The normal gym person would be like, my body's sore. It's stiff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I talk a lot about that because when your brain starts having a very healthy but unhealthy relationship with pain, your body can then break through the barrier, you know? Because the idea of trying to transform your body fundamentally relies on you being uncomfortable. Yeah. And anything that's uncomfortable, you know, it's painful, right? So it's taking your body through the extremity where you genuinely want to see doing a leg curl and seeing your legs fail because there's nothing your legs can possibly do at that time.
Yeah.
So that's the pain, you know, barrier that you want to, you know, get through, right? Mm. So to relate that back to life, I mean, Ben knows my story quite well. Mm. We're not going to go back to that. But there's been instances in my life where it was painful, mentally painful, emotionally painful.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea of if I can take my body through the physical pain, I can train my mental muscle to do exactly the same thing.
That's big.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that understanding that, in fact, I remember when I put my body through the most amounts of pain while I was training. It's one of the three best experiences of my gym life.
Mm.
And I went through something in my personal capacity. I know it's not the same, but in my mind, I was like, if I can go through that pain at the gym, this is nothing. I can handle this.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's also just having a relativity thing where you're like, if I could handle that and I was able to genuinely tell my brain that it's not that hard and it's okay, like I can get through this, then what I'm handling right now on a personal perspective, I can get through this.
tell me before you go compete and go show, you know, we've always got the athletes bumping hip hop.
Yeah.
What are you bumping before you roll out?
You do not want to know.
surprise me and say Vanessa Carlton 1,000.
I've got the most weirdest playlist ever. And it's only because as an introvert that I am, I really love people watching. Like, I'm the kind of person, I'm interested about people's behavior.
Yeah.
I'm interested about people's mannerisms. So when I get an opportunity to travel to people's countries, I try and indulge in everything. Okay. Sometimes I don't get the opportunity to do the food, obviously, because I'm dieting, but I want to listen to the music. So my playlist, literally, genuinely speaking, is Bollywood music. I listen to, I'm being serious, there's a Bollywood song I can recite. I know the lyrics. I know what they mean. You know, I listen to Ethiopian music because I was stuck at a layover in Ethiopia for 7 hours and that's all they were playing. And then eventually I'm like, this is actually a jam. So I started Googling Ethiopian music. So my playlist can genuinely go from Frank Sinatra to a Bollywood song to,
that's crazy,
you know, to a Kwaito song to, I really, and it's also because of an article that I read, you know, it's something called gearing.
Yeah.
Where you want to play around with certain types of emotions to actually calm the emotion that you're trying to channel yourself into, you know. So you can go from a romantic ballad to, you know, a I'm about to like kill you song, you know what I mean? But it's just about mental gearing to just get your brain to be like, okay, let me get rid of all the other emotions that might heighten my senses.
Cool.
Let me focus on what I need to focus on. But there are certain songs that I will, you know, listen to just before going on stage because they're very motivational.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it'll be a song that I'm opposed to, which has historically been Amanda Black, Amazul.
Okay.
So I'll always listen to that song just before I get on stage.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, this is what I feel so interesting about what you do is that you say you got something that pose to, okay? It's a performance sport.
Yeah.
Going back to rugby,
right?
The tight five knows what they got to do.
Yes.
The backline knows what they got to do. A five's got a certain kind of play.
Yeah.
The scrum was going to occur in, like, there's a kicking game or whatever it may be, defensive structures.
Right.
Your routine, how much do you deviate from what you do on stage? And again, is it down to event or is it because, you know, what you said there about the judges, it's like, this guy could be a back guy. This guy could be a pecs guy. This guy's more like shoulders and traps and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you then sort of create a sort of routine that's based on that kind of stuff?
100%. So the first question you asked was very important, right? It's because you say, how do you relate that to the rugby? The way I got my nerves kind of like settled was me just realizing I need to perform. This is what I'm doing for the rugby. It's just a performance. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, without sounding like those guys, I had to put on a personality, but I really had to. You know what I mean?
It was a whole like thing. There's like 60,000 people screaming.
Of course. So
I
genuinely had to just tell myself, listen, this is outside of your elements. This is not what you really kind of do, but see it as doing a routine on stage and be putting on a show, right? And the irony about such things is that you then get pictures like the picture that Sia and I trended on, right?
That's so one of the great, we featured on the show a while back. One of the greatest like sports photographs of all time.
Yeah, so it's already been ranked as one of the best.
So
that picture was actually taken out of awkwardness. And I'll tell you why. Because when I think I did like two interviews straight after the picture circulated and they asked if it was like planned, as you said, choreographed. And it actually wasn't. It was actually because I'm such an introvert. So my brain went in and out of, performing. Oh my gosh, dude, you're performing? Okay, what are you going to do next? Like, you can't just stand here. Like, it's awkward. Like, people are watching you. So I had this internal dialogue in my head, right? And I'll never forget when Kruger, who's the marketing guy for Saru, he gave me a brief, right? Like, the first match. And because that picture was taken in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And he gave me a brief in the first match. And it's while I'm having this internal dialogue in my head that I remember the conversation I had with Kruger because he was like, you know, you need to get there and you know, carrying the spear, you're supposed to personify the whole idea that as the boxer coming out, you're pulling them out of, you know, the tunnel into the field. So that was supposed to be like personification. So then I remember kneeling there after this music cut and then like Sia was supposed to come out and I'm kneeling there for like 20 seconds. And I'm going, I don't know what to do. Like, I know people are watching me, but I really do not know what to do next. You know, literally, that was going on through my head.
Yeah.
And then I remember the conversation with Marlon. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, imagine you're pulling C out the tunnel and you're sending him out. So as he got out, I literally just took the spear and I drew a line as if like I'm pulling him out of the tunnel and I was pointing him, shooting him into the crowd.
That is.
And it only came across that it was planned. It wasn't. It was just me feeling awkward and standing there going, I don't know what else to do with myself.
So to relate it back to bodybuilding, it's exactly that.
It's exactly the whole idea of you got to put on a show, you got to put on a performance. You know, even the way you showcase your body, depending on which judge you're facing, you know, you got to know. Some judges, as I said, like the bigger guys. So you genuinely pose yourself into looking bigger than the normal guy. It's just how you articulate your body and your physique on stage.
So, you know what, like whenever I look at something I know I can't do,
yeah,
all my senses are heightened towards. I got about 23 questions running through my head at any given stage here.
Yeah.
How do you improve though? Because if you look at you from a naked eye, right, I mean, like what are you, like 130 kilograms?
140, yeah.
140?
Yeah. 140. Okay.
Yeah. And you are what, 6'2"?
5% body fat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
No, that was a quick flex because you actually asked him about his height.
I'm 6'1". Sorry, I'm 1.8.
That was such 1.8 a quick flex.
It's absolutely crazy to try to comprehend those numbers. So then from the outsider's perspective, that's the reaction we're going to give you because we're never going to be there. But for you, you are scrutinizing every sinew and performance, everything. Yes. Where do you improve? Like, you've just had a run of events now for your 2024 season as a bodybuilder.
Right.
What do you go back to the drawing board with? What does your drawing board actually look like? Because you are already this man mountain. Yeah. You already are the personification of, like, human potential, basically.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not blowing smoke up your ass here. But this is a mindset that I'm sure you can take on.
Yeah.
You've done all the hard work.
Right.
And then it could be like, well, you know, that judge's a dick or this is unfair.
Yeah.
That's what you could take on.
Sure.
But knowing you the way I do, I know that you're going back to the drawing board and going, that 1% there, that 1% there.
100%.
Where do you actually physically get better? Because it's a hard thing for us to think of.
Look, I mean, when you look at bodybuilding, right, you literally look at the word, you're building a body. So for me, it's sitting back and going, I see how I look like. How do I then make this better? And the one person that actually articulated quite well was Arnold Schwarzenegger in one of his documentaries. It's like, being a bodybuilding is like being a sculpture. You know, you start building the sculpture, you put it together, and then sometimes you wake up in the morning, you just leave it for like a few days, and you wake up some morning, you're going, my sculpture needs a bit of more shoulders. So you start focusing more on shoulders, so you put more clay on the shoulders, you leave it for a while, you come back, you're like, maybe if I narrow down the waist, this is what it's going to look like. It's genuinely, that's how it goes. You know, you get to a point, as you said, where the layman in bodybuilding just looks at my physique, goes, dude, you already look great.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I'm like, thank you so much. But I know that maybe for this year and this year alone, and this is how specific bodybuilding can become. You're genuinely just trying to improve two body parts. You know what I mean? Not that you're neglecting the other body parts, but your focus is just, if I can just put more clay on that back and put maybe more clay on that, you know, that hammy, then my physique will start looking the way it does. Because, you know, in bodybuilding, as you said, it's subjective, but it is a criteria. You look at symmetry, you look at proportion, you look at balance. You know, you don't want to have an arm or bicep that's bigger than, you know, your shoulder, you know. So sometimes you actually, genuinely have to slow down certain body parts that would normally grow faster than others. I know my arms really just grow quickly. So I get to a point where I'm like, you know what, I'll train arms every 2 weeks. And I know it sounds weird, but that's how specific bodybuilding can become, you know. But for me right now, it's just about getting my back thickness and getting my hamstrings to be bigger. So that will become my main focus, genuinely speaking, for 12 months, where my training program is reliant on having two back sessions a week, two leg sessions a week. And then, as I said, maybe every 2 to 3 weeks, I'll put in a bit of arms there just to make sure that obviously the muscle doesn't become dormant. But that's being an artist. That's looking at your sculpture and going, I need to fix this. And if I fine tune that, that's going to look better.
That's incredible body awareness,
that's
though.
That's crazy.
For your average joke, it's like, I've got too much of a boop, I need to go for a run. It is absolutely insane. Like the cosmic leap between everyday life and what you go through, because your mind has to know this kind of stuff.
You have to.
Sorry, James, I know you're in the shadows there. You got a question.
I am. Jump in here. It's just a little bit like back to the rugby.
Yeah.
Such a jock is James.
Yeah.
That's what I do. So, you know, MP as a character and an image.
Yeah.
Ahead of Bok Games has become really sort of huge and important for South Africans, especially going into these fixtures like against the All Blacks and Rugby Championship games. You as a fan of the game itself, to be that person that leads out the team and stare down Beauden Barrett and, you know, run past them like you guys do, what does that like actually feel like inside to be, you know, just a fan of the game, to do that as a responsibility ahead of such a game like that?
Look, I'll be very honest. The first time I did it, I just genuinely thought with the entertainment element out of this. Like, it's just nice. You know what I mean? Not that because I didn't understand the gravity of what it holds or what it means for certain people, but for me, it was more like a, you know, it's the theme song for the box before they come in. And it just so happened that they got these three guys that are coming on with them, right? I think it's only when I finished the match and I was getting out the stadium, a lot of traffic. So this old, very cute little mama spots me. Hey, even though you're clothed, I can see you're the impy guy. Hey, so I'm like, yes, ma'am, I am. Can I take a picture? I'm like, ma'am, sure, let's go. And as we're taking the picture, I'll never forget, she has a hand wrap right on my waist. She goes, ooh, you're nice and snug. I'm like, ma'am, you know? And then she literally goes, I hope you realize you become important to us as much as the national anthem. Mm. That's when my brain dropped. I was like, oof, it's the national anthem, guys. Like, it's one of those things where you don't disrespect the national anthem. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's one thing that also unites us. It's the one thing that also we sing in harmony. I mean, you hear it at the stadium. We united against the national anthem. It's the national anthem. Yeah. So for her to equate the MPs walking on the field as important as singing the national anthem, I was like, okay, my guy, you don't realize your job until, you know, you hear such the feedback, impact, right? Yeah. So to go back to your question, how does it feel, bro? It's I wear it as a badge of honor. It's a privilege. It's also just been in a space of professional athletes and understanding what it means for them as well. You know, as I said, you know, guys literally saying, you don't know what it means for us. We, you know, the boys and I speak about you guys. We look forward to playing at home because we know the MPs are going to walk us off. You know, so to know that you form part of what they're looking forward to playing at home, you know, the fans and they mention that element, then you're like, oh, wow. Like, I kind of can't have a low energy day. You know what I mean? Because if I have a low energy day, it's going to resonate on them. So it's like, I got to also just put on the show and make sure that the boys are feeding off the fact that, hey, listen, we got you.
It's more than a game, huh?
It's more than a game,
it's
bro.
So much more than the cliche as
no,
well.
No, no, it's. I think as the box become more successful, as they really are already, and understanding the MP role as it grows as well, it's going to have more impact, I think. You know, it's big. It's big. It's and huge. It's getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's getting big. Excuse the pun.
that's what we're here for.
I just want to ask, you know, you know, what I love to do is to strip down the person and find out who they 100%. Are.
Steady,
just chill out. Just chill out. Do you understand what
I'm
saying?
We need to get a Heineken Zeros, I think, at this stage. Huh?
I mean, as I was supposed to say, so what are the unseen passions that you have, you know, outside of sports? What are you doing, you know, just to keep yourself sane and as a normal person?
Geez, bro. So, look.
That's such a good question because nothing of what you just said right now, there's no leeway. your life is so hard to be that.
No, man. Look, I do a lot of downtime, man. I don't like answering that because it almost sounds like I'm that athlete that always have to have downtime that it involves doing athletic stuff. But I like going to hikes. Like, I do a hike.
Would have never thunk it.
Yeah. Like, I genuinely, like, I hate the concept of walking, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But the nature part of things, it's where I can spend time with myself. I spend time with my thoughts, my God, and, you know, just collect, you know, the scenery. I like doing that. You know, I've got a foundation as well. I'm actually going to be doing work, which I am already. I mean, I'm in partnership with McDonald's.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing some charity work, giving books back, you know, to primary school and stuff, you know. Right. I've been privileged to have more than two brain cells. So I pride myself in being academic. No. You know, I went to UCT, studying engineering. So I'm very big on education, you know, because, I mean, the obvious reasons, education is key, guys, you know. And at the same time, I'm also big on people chasing their passion.
Cool.
You know, because I'm privileged enough that I get to wake up every day and be a professional bodybuilder.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like work for me because I found my love and my flame for life.
Mm.
Right. So yeah, that's my downtime. I've got two little boys as well, my little rascals. So I spend a lot of time with my boys.
That's nice.
And yes, definitely they're going to train.
Okay. I was going to be like, they can't become nerds and watch Star Wars the whole time.
No, they really can. I want them to. No, I don't want my boys to do bodybuilding. I love my sports, but man, it's difficult.
Okay.
You know, I hope they become rugby players and, you know, become the next Siya Kolisi. But yeah, that's what I do, man. I do a lot of nature. I love nature.
Also, that whole like steady state cardio gets you ripped though.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I actually kill two birds one stone, you know what I mean? Get the cardio doing going and then just take on nature and stuff.
You know, the obvious question to ask next is, who are your favorite sporting idols? But I'm not gonna ask that. I'm gonna ask your non-sporting role models. Who are those people in your life?
Non-sporting role models.
Mm.
One of them is actually someone we both call ourselves. We have a friendship, non-friendship. And the reason we say this is because we don't really believe in the conceptualization of having like best friends.
Yeah.
But we became friends over time, which is Vusi Tsembiwayo.
Oh.
So he became a very close mate of mine. He's a mentor of mine since 2017, before I even turned pro.
Yeah.
One of the most deepest conversations I've had in my life has always been about him. He's always challenging me to see bigger, think bigger. So definitely him. I think most of my guys that came as clients became my, you know, people I resonate with and, you know, people that found their passion. DJ Fresh is one of them, you know, someone who found his passion so many odd years ago before I was even born.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see him go through the progression of becoming an established international DJ has been quite beautiful, you know. And my late grandfather, man.
Oh.
My late grandfather, that guy was a gentleman and a scholar, you know, 2 meters tall, didn't say much, but was very impactful in the man that I am today.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
I just want to go back a few steps here because, again, it's like, what are the next steps? Because there's so many people who are watching you maybe for the first time on this interview. You're going to go, cool, I want to follow this guy. I want to see where his progress is.
Yeah.
What are the steps to Mr. Olympia?
What are the steps?
Because as you said, it's like you think of this as like a grand slam of bodybuilding.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So what are those next steps that you're working towards and how do we follow you from there?
Yeah, look, I mean, now it's about working on my physique. As I said, coming back from the Dubai Pro, it was my first time being judged by Mr. Steve Weinberger, who's actually the head judge at Mr. Olympia.
Right.
So it's not that I devalue anyone else's input, other head judges, but he's one holds more gravity because he's also the head judge at the competition I'm trying to qualify for. So when I got feedback from him and Tyler Mannion, who's the chairperson of IFBB, it was very crucial for me to make sure that I tick those boxes. So for the next 6-7 months, I know it sounds weird. I need to get bigger and work on my conditioning. I know.
Well, I mean, you say that, but like you got a big frame on you.
Yes.
I mean like if you were, I mean, Sandile, you are next to him right now. Okay, yeah. So you are 177.
Let's go with that.
Yes, you're 175.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's less of a frame to build on.
So he actually has the perfect bodybuilding height.
I knew it.
He really does. Most bodybuilders.
You are messing around with the podcast.
most bodybuilders that have become really good and successful in bodybuilding, that's almost like the perfect bodybuilder height. It's 175, 177. So yeah, I mean, being 186 means I can put on more mass. So that's what I'm working on. And then next year, definitely winning a pro show. Yeah. So that's how you qualify. You just need to win a pro show. Every single year, we get given about 21 of those, you know, so you just pick which country you want to, you know, go compete in and you get rolling, you know. So yeah, I hope my journey next year, not that I hope, it will be a good, successful one. It's just, as I said, working on the feedback I got from the judges, putting my head down and working harder than I ever have before.
And obviously, you've kind of like targeted what those things are because travel. I mean, I just know from like knowing MMA fighters.
Yeah.
When it comes to weight cuts and all these kind of things, you don't really want to have the worst travel.
Yeah.
So I would imagine the same for you because then it's like culture. How do you acclimatize to that side?
Yeah.
Food, language, all those kind of things because you have to be so specific.
Right.
When you get in that stage, it's not like, sorry, guys, I had a bit of a dodgy meal last night.
No one really cares about it. No one's trying to listen to that, you know?
No, of course not.
You have to make sure that you're well prepared. You know, you prepare before leaving the country, you know, you Google places, you Google gyms, you Google where you're going to train, you Google which closest supermarkets, you know, what kind of food do they sell, you know, you take certain things for granted because it's home. For me, if I got into the car now, you said you wanted fish, I know exactly where to take you. You know what I mean? Then you get to certain countries, you're like, oh man, they don't have hake. Mm. And then now you need to find an alternative to hake, which might be maybe that country has tilapia. Mm. So it becomes a lot of research based, you know, and then obviously traveling 5 days before the show to climatize, because sometimes the weather there is not obviously the weather you had in South Africa. So that can also play an impact, a big one, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, and also, I mean, holding water while flying, people's bodies are different. I know a friend of mine who actually loses the water while flying. So that's a good thing for him. And then some of us can actually, you know, pack on water while flying. So you need to just get to that country, get the water off you, and then get rolling.
Like I said, I got about 1,000 questions, but we have to draw the line there. We wish you the absolute best.
Can I just ask one more question?
Carry on.
Yeah, before.
Sorry,
before.
It's just that we've got about another 3 hours of sports to get into.
we never have these type of guests all the time.
It's MCN8 final. I want to get into that, but you carry on.
Okay, cool.
We can end up with this.
I have to ask.
Yeah.
Who are your goats in bodybuilding?
Wow.
And you just give me five. And I had to ask it.
Okay, it's a fair question. Look.
Well, I mean, it's like goats and why, obviously. Because I'm pretty sure I can name those names. Yeah. But there's something about them,
yes,
which would mean a lot more from you coming from you.
Yeah. For me, number one has to be Jay Cutler. He's the only Miss Olympia to lose a title and win it back. Mm. As a brand and how he's established his brand, held his brand, and even till today in 2024. The value of his brand as being an ambassador for the sport, it's something I genuinely look up to. You know what I mean? It's something, you know, it's one thing having your name etched in history.
Yeah.
But for me, there's certain responsibility implied as to what you did with that, you know, that power, you know, that responsibility. And the way Jay Cutler did it, you know, being the one guy who was able to defeat Ronnie Coleman, and how the narrative then perpetuated, how he built this brand, continues to be an ambassador for the sports. For me, that's beautiful. So it has to be Jay Cutler, number one. Number two will have to be Kevin Levrone, for obvious reasons, because on a physical perspective, we have similar genetics. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a very similar genetic structure. So on a physicality, he's the kind of body where I'm like, okay, I'm kind of getting close to where I kind of, you know, need to be, you know. Number three, obviously the king of bodybuilding, Ronnie Coleman. Mm. Number four would be Dexter Jackson. What people don't know about Dexter Jackson is that on paper, he's actually the most successful bodybuilder to ever roam Earth. He has the most pro shows wins. He's the only bodybuilder to win all titles that have been ever offered. He's won Mr. Olympia. He's won all the Arnold Classics, Africa, Asia, Spain, Brazil, United States. He's won all of them. He's also been in three eras of bodybuilding, right? So he has in fact, he has the longest pro career ever. He retired at 52, yeah. Right? And your question earlier was, well, how's the time span of bodybuilding? A bodybuilder will start peaking at about the age of 32, 34 because of how many years first you need to train to get to that.
Right.
And then your career, you are lucky if you're still on stage at the age of 42, 41. So it's a very short career, 10 years max. That's our sort of like the pinnacle of this is us doing it, right? So definitely Dexter Jackson. And then this is a controversial one. I'll end off with this one. And it's controversial because he's a very good mate of mine. But take it to the bank. Samson Dawood is going to change the sport of bodybuilding in this generation. Mm-hmm. You know, he's bringing back the golden era look. He's a big guy. He's about a centimeter shorter than me. This guy rolls around at 155 kilos.
155.
off season.
Yeah.
Sorry. And beautiful aesthetics, man. Beautiful aesthetics. So he'll have to go down as my top five goats, you know, and just look out for him. Give him in 2 weeks. Let's see what happens, Mr. Olympia, in 2 weeks.
I don't mean to chase you out here. which football team do you support locally?
Is it wrong if I say I don't understand football?
That's crazy.
That's totally fine.
There are no wrong answers.
There's a reason why. It was a grade 8. I'll never forget. Mr. Prinsloo, I kicked the soccer ball. He walked up to me. In fact, that's how I ended up playing rugby. Because at school, it was like, oh, everyone has to do soccer trials.
Yeah.
I didn't have experience with soccer.
Yeah.
Even growing up, I wasn't a fan. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it because how hard can playing soccer be?
Well, exactly. Mm.
Right. So I went to the field, kick a ball, literally kicked it once. He called. I remember he blew the whistle, came up to me. He goes, hey, Spoo, you know what? You know, next week is rugby trials, right? So I was like, oh, is that what you're saying? Oh, ah, got it. Okay. So I'm not, I really don't know much. I know I can hold a conversation about soccer, but I can't say I support a soccer team.
That's okay. Fair. Well, look, I mean, let's wrap up the show with this. So, it's MTNate final this weekend.
I heard about that in Durban.
Yeah.
You see, I can hold a conversation like
shout
that.
Out to
I mean, obviously, I want to bring this up because, I mean, look, tomorrow on the Gareth Cliff Show, if you're watching us live, we'll go into the full preview for the weekend. There's a lot of rugby on this weekend.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Premier League football. We've got so much to catch up on the Champions League and then the league that Sandile's team plays in, which I don't know what that's called.
You know, chat me about Europa League.
Is that, sorry, that's the one. Sorry, I mean, Arsenal are in Champions League.
Whatever, so man.
Okay, so, but this weekend, we're going to wrap up with this.
Yep.
Pirates versus Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
Moses Mabhida Stadium. Because I feel like the Moses...
Oh, is that the final?
Moses Mabhida MTNA final stadium.
Yeah.
Because it's the best place to have it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it? But anyway, let's go.
Look, it's because it's kind of neutral. That's what I'm saying.
Because obviously Stellenbosch should have been Cape Town, Pirates, Johannesburg.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But Pirates, big KZN following.
100%.
So you've got to think, okay, neutral, but hometown.
Yeah.
They've won it three of the last four times.
Yeah.
They are a proven cup team. I mean, Nedbank Cup win in Mbombela against Sundowns last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would I be right in saying overwhelming favorites?
Overwhelming favorites.
Overwhelming favorites. And
they've
we'll
been
carry
playing
on.
Electric football. Mm. I'll do it for my dad. Let's wrap up this weekend and let him have my dad can have a great weekend and just let him win, guys. But Pirates have been playing sensational. As we talked about it, they're going to be the dark horses to win the league. And I think this is just going to solidify their win and their hopes. But also, Stellenbosch were great last year. So I don't think we can write them off. I know everybody's talking about Pirates, but Stellenbosch are going to be, you know, good opponents.
So just picking up about having a conversation about sports, you get these little one-liners here or there. People say that Pirates are a great cup team.
Yeah.
Is there any actual, like, does that mean anything? Or is that just one of those cutaway lines because you're tired of saying
no, game man. Is too hard? No, man, it's eight games. It's eight games, and it's not like a 38-game season where, you know, you can lose some, win some, or draw here. You know, you've got eight games to win, or you go to penalties, you know, so... They've been, you know, that's they've just been great in that format. You know, they can be having horrible league form, but when it's time to get to a big tournament, they switch it on. I just don't get it.
Comments, before we wrap it up, any particular comments you want us to roll on there?
Like one or two. I know we're short on time. Just firstly,
that's fine. But you know, James, you are the commentator. You are the guy who goes.
Why is my name and PD close to each other there?
Hey, okay. This is from Simon. Hey, Sandile, I heard P. Diddy was offered the Man United job, but turned it down. As he would worry it would ruin his reputation.
Wow.
That's incredibly fucked up. And let's move on.
James, did you type that?
Simon, come on. Be better than
Simon.
This.
Simon says, you know.
Nice one, Simon. Nice one.
Another one from Tracy Bard. Chicken and broccoli is the universal bodybuilder's diet. Is that the case?
Not so all year round. No, I mean, like, full stop. Not so much a question, more a statement.
Right,
but I mean,
more of a statement. not really. I mean, the broccoli part of things, it's just...
aesthetics.
Yeah, it's just how people just want to make our diets seem clean. Yeah. But yeah, we eat a lot of chickens. We thank goodness for the chickens. Yeah.
So that's obviously those like super lean meats, right?
Yeah. So chicken, fish, 100%. Yeah. But I mean, most of us play around with a lot of protein.
Ostrich? Yeah.
Definitely. Kudu.
Lean,
I'm in there, man.
Kudu? Game meat?
Game meats, yeah.
Damn.
I'm in there.
Kudu. Never saw that coming.
Dude, I eat a lot of game meats, huh?
Right.
Dude, it's the best. Okay, James, wait, we're going to finish off. This weekend, of course, we have really run out of time to get deeper into this, but it's the Red Bull show run. Now, it's completely sold out.
You're right. It is completely.
Yeah, we did get through that.
All VIPs are all sold out.
Anyway, Heineken Zero Lounge, we're going to be there. If you're in the mix, we probably should have more time around this, but fantastic guest this weekend. Spoo, thanks so much for joining
us.
We will be talking about Red Bull show run next week because I think it's one of those cool events where we all... Formula One fans in some way, shape, or form, but this is one of the things we can actually experience locally. So we can get more into this next week. Michaela and I are going to be on the track, so to speak, which now is Stanton. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute honor to have you in the studio because I said you're the biggest guest we've had, it wasn't just about your size. I mean, dude, like your career is so hectic.
Thank you so much. It really is.
And I love the way you could kind of match it up with what your Springbok experience is because when you hit that stage, that is your Ellis Park. Those are your things.
Absolutely.
It's just that you don't have the people cheering you on like that. Right. But always just know, like, people get to know you. They always say just amazing things about you.
Thank you so much.
So may that go into your next show. And that first, the big pro event, Mr. Olympia, I mean, that'll be our next chat.
Thank you. No, definitely. Definitely. Yes. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. So like, subscribe, all those wonderful things. And we'll see you live next week. Or, you know, catch the podcast and listen to other podcasts as we go. Chat next week.